Hello, neighbors. Welcome to Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. I'm Ivan Emke, your host. This is episode 21 of season 3. The show is brought to you by Kitchen Table Communications and the Voice of Bon Bay Radio Network, and we are fond of noting that season 3 is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada. It's dangerous to rank foods, but I'd say that my favorite grain is oats. It's a cool season crop, kind of like me. Once considered a weed, it was destined to become a staple of many early human groups, and it is among the most nutrient-dense foods that you can eat. However, the vast majority of the oats that we grow these days is fed to animals. Many foods have a lobby that argue against their consumption, and the anti-oats movement exists, but it's pretty small. There are no pop diet bestseller books about oat belly. Oats were introduced to North America by Scottish settlers over four centuries ago. Back in 1755, Samuel Johnson's dictionary defined oats as a grain which in England is generally given to horses, but in Scotland appears to support the people. The Scottish replied with, "Oh, that's why England has such good horses and Scotland has such fine people." I kept seeing these snack bars from an enterprise called The Oat Company in cafes and a few grocery stores. One day I took a closer look at the label and realized that it was a company from St. John's. So I went to church to find out more.
The base right now, for most of our bars, we use an organic date and we use gluten-free oats. That's kind of in everything. I think we're competing with muffins at the drive-thru because that's what people eat for breakfast. Or they just happen to be at the stadium watching their children's hockey game and they're going to grab a Mars bar. Store managers, they get evaluated. It's relentless. There's corporate people constantly going around. The variety, the cleanliness, everything's fully stocked. Terrifically crowded space.
There's
a lot of bars, there's a lot of snack products, a lot of good food, a lot of good brands, but we think ours is pretty good too.
It may seem odd to head to church to talk about oats, but the Oat Company operates out of the Gower Street United Church in downtown St. John's. And companies like this are part of the sustainability mix for some church buildings. The exit of churches from both rural and urban landscapes diminishes everyone because some of these have been providing services to the entire community and not just those that happen to attend. They're gathering places, theaters, office spaces, concert sites, certified kitchens for small food entrepreneurs, and more. I meet up with Patrick Griffin of the Oat Company in the basement of the Gower Street United Church. He gives me a tour of the kitchens. It's getting close to Christmas, so the men's club is busy preparing a seasonal feast. Washing, peeling, boiling, and roasting. Be careful, they may give you an apron and a peeler and get you to help out. Join us.
Pat Griffin, I own the Oat Company, and we're sitting at Gower Street United Church, downtown St. John's.
Well, there's a story there, I'm sure. The Oat Company at the United Church, I would think a Presbyterian church would have an oat company.
That's right, real Scottish roots and Scottish oatmeal. That's true. I shouldn't reach out to them.
Yeah. How did the Oat Company become part of your life?
Before it was a business, it was just a hobby. We used to make food at home. We were never culinary experts or anything, but a young family, and we just started making healthy snacks at home. The main thing we were trying to do was just with no sugar, no preservatives, just really clean, healthy snacks, which surprisingly was hard to find. Started making it probably a couple of years, you know, family habit. And my daughter, this would have been 2017 or so, said, you know, Dad, can we go to a farmer's market? Something we like to do as a family. Yeah. And I said, sure. But she was more serious than I was. And we picked away. She'd kind of give me a nudge, say, Dad, when are we going to do this? In 2019, we started a business.
Yep.
We just went to a market, St. Thomas Church here in St. John's.
Yep.
So then it went from a hobby to technically a business for one farmer's market.
The recipes you used were ones that you'd been using all along?
We did, we perfected them bit by bit. We started making little oatmeal blends, and we would fill these Tupperware, stacks of Tupperware, so we'd have cereal ready for the week. And then sometimes we would bake a granola or have a bag of energy bites in the freezer.
Yeah.
So this whole host of things, using dates, using dried fruit, nut butters, you just make variations on that, which is essentially unlimited. So we had actually a suite of recipes that we still use.
Yeah.
Haven't changed at all. Same things that we just kept scaling up and scaling up from one farmer's market then to bigger volumes.
Yeah. Did you have a background in entrepreneurship?
Not at all, which probably showed through. Maybe it still does. I guess I definitely had a passion for clean, natural foods. That was always something we were trying to do more of at home. Purely because you couldn't buy it. Could have bought it, we probably would have. But no other culinary expertise or specialties. So just that trial and error for forming a recipe or getting faster at a recipe.
How did the Gower Street United Church come into it then?
So Gower Street's my church. I volunteer here. Family goes here. Our business started off at home. We were licensed at home doing that. And we were growing at home. But when COVID came, everyone was home. My wife was working from home. My children were home. So that was no longer feasible. Yeah. So I called my fellow volunteers at Gower and said, hey, can I try out the kitchen just to see if it works for us? Because I got to get out of the house. And they said, you know, come down. If it works for you, great. If your business is able to pay rent, great. But we'll just grow into this together. So I was all by myself down in this big kitchen. And then my family would help. And then onwards. But that was just a community connection. That's where I volunteer, where I go. And they let me get started.
And the kitchen is a certified kitchen.
Certified commercial kitchen.
Yeah. And then when you came in, the health inspectors would have checked your process?
They made sure all the Gower stuff, I'll say, was completely up to code. Yep. And then they asked me and evaluated what I precisely wanted to do in there, from the packaging to the labeling. And so now we have our own commercial license, and Gower has its own commercial license. Yep. Yep. And it's been a big part of our business, in fact, in that we've got our own space to grow and make our food. The rent is better than we'd pay commercially. Yeah, I mean, I hope to stay here a long time.
Are there other food companies who are using this commercial kitchen? Because it might not be obvious to go to looking for a place in a church.
Early on, there were. Gower, I think it was 20, 30 years ago, they invested in the kitchen for their own benefit. Yes. An enduring benefit is some other food vendors, you know, begin to be able to use it. There's a huge demand, we've seen it, from small startups that want or need to leave their home and looking for a commercial space, but just don't have the funds to go renovate a commercial space. So we're right now trying to play a little bit of a liaison role the best we can to help these businesses, because I'm passionate about other business owners as well, and just help them take that next step. Because for a lot of food vendors, you can't sell into bigger stores or even smaller cafes unless you're purely commercial. Some people, home-based, it's nice, it's good for a farmer's market, but not for a retail shelf. So that's a bit of a gap in the marketplace, actually, the small commercial kitchens.
It can be a really difficult step sometimes to go from home-based to a commercial kitchen like this. How did that change your relationship to the company?
You're absolutely right. We used to make our little energy bars with, I had a piece of wood with like a food grade wax on it. We would cut them out with pizza cutters. I would measure them, all caps, manual process. But having a little extra space, purely just space on a table, lets you kind of evaluate, okay, if I did this and then this and then this and then this, we could make more and more. So that is really the biggest transformation for here at Gower, is to be able to make enough, have a healthy inventory, so that I, while I'm still involved in the making of the product, because we're just more efficient, my spare time, I can grow the business. I can go see a store manager. I can do a little bit of social media, some of these other things. And also, because we didn't have to spend tens of thousands, maybe, on a major commercial refit in an industrial park, you know, it's a loan we didn't need to take, that then we can just gradually grow into and make the investments kind of when we need to. Which I'd recommend anyone, if you can grow the business methodically, when you have the sales to scale up, well then, I mean, that's the way to do it.
What's the technology that you had to invest in to go from home to what you are now?
Yep. Most of our products are no-bake. They're vegan, they're gluten-free, dairy-free, really clean product. Because we use whole ingredients, the biggest processing challenge for us is just getting them chopped up and combined so they taste good, the texture is good, and we can actually create a bar. So we have commercial-grade chopper, and then that forms like a sticky dough, which we roll out, and then we use roller cutters. It's like a roller pin with blades on it. So every bar is the exact dimension, length, and width. So we could make upwards of a couple thousand bars a day. And it's technology that if it breaks, worst case scenario, you go buy a new one. Rather than a technician for $500 a day or something. Right. So we're still at that level, which has some benefits. We did last year make our first, I'll say, major investment in a wrapping machine. It's called a flow wrapper to wrap bars. So the bars travel on a conveyor belt, and a piece of cut film that is custom to our products goes around the bar, so it's kind of wrapped on the back and the ends, just like any candy bar or granola bar. So it's really best in class for food safety, for shelf life, for letting us put the right information on the package, for lot codes and expiry dates and so on. So we get brand benefits, production benefits, food safety benefits, and because we're more efficient, I'm finding we're freeing up some time. We're having some shorter days. We're able to skip some days where I can take my energy and then hopefully grow grow the business.
Do you have a piece of music I can use?
Yeah, I love some local artists. Yeah. I know Tim Baker, he has a new album at the festival. It's superb.
At last, I lay down my bags, half dead in the Pacific sand. I've been chasing something west, but it stayed just ahead. And today, today is the same as it was then in 2008. In the stillness of Central LA, nothing ever goes my way. It's the same black sky in the sun.
Tim Baker with Echo Park, a song from his most recent release, as requested by my guest today, Patrick Griffin of the Oat Company. Let's head back to his office at the Gower Street United Church, where we'll get into a discussion of the intricacies of retail relationships, the importance of understanding the needs of store managers, and semi-apocalyptic concepts like ghost shoppers.
Who would be your big competitors? Like the Clif Bars?
Yeah, I'd say head-to-head, that would definitely be our biggest competitors, yeah. Us to other bars. It's a good product, it's a good brand, it's a good reputation, very familiar, it's available everywhere. Yeah. But in a more like real-life, day-to-day competition, I think we're competing with muffins at the drive-thru, because that's what people eat for breakfast. Or they just happen to be at the stadium watching their children's hockey game, and they're going to grab a Mars bar from the canteen. We think we make good food. We try to make it as appealing and exciting and craveable as some of these top brands are, and then make it real easy for people to get. So we believe you just need to be where your customers are, whether that's online, whether that's a cafe, whether that's grocery stores. We're not in as many places as a Clif Bar yet, but maybe someday.
The other thing about moving from farmers markets to stores might be the need for information like expiry dates, nutritional information. Are there people who work on that that you can contact?
We do a lot of it ourselves, like nutrition facts, for example. We know all of our recipes, we have them down to the gram, what goes in. And then there's pieces of software that you can say, well, this is our ingredient, here's the nutritional profile of the ingredient, and if you put X grams of this, Y grams of that, it'll give you a label. A little more difficult when you're dealing with expiry dates and lot codes. Because our products are vegan, they're all dry goods, the expiry date on the ingredient, it could be like 18 months. But we keep it really conservative, around 8 months or so. Worst case, it may dry out a little bit. It's kind of manageable on your own.
And you try to limit the number of ingredients?
So four to five. I think one might have six ingredients. And the base right now, for most of our bars, we use an organic date, and we use gluten-free oats. That's kind of in everything. Otherwise, it may be a nut butter, some organic cocoa, some unsweetened coconut. Clean things that a lot of people have in their pantry. These are familiar things. There's no added sugar in our bars, which is a big thing for people, and no other preservatives or emulsifiers or other things for texture and shelf life. No, our stuff is, we think, you know, kind of good on its own.
Where do you get your ingredients? How do you source them?
Right now, our biggest one's from Costco. I'll say our dates and our oats. We had used different wholesale suppliers, but the quality was all over the place. It may be the same wholesaler, but you may receive a different brand. So back when inflation hit every business household in Canada or the world, we started making calls to different suppliers, and it still surprises me. Costco, they were the cheapest and so far the best quality organic dates that we've sourced. $5. And our gluten-free oats we use are Canadian. We get them through Costco. Yeah. We cut our oat cost by 50%. Unbeatable. Yeah. It is a no-brainer to go to Costco. And we've developed a relationship with the folks at Costco, and they always ask how we're doing, how are sales, where are you going. They say, listen, if you start getting some sales off the aisle, like you're into healthy volumes in different places, we'll introduce you to the sales team. So maybe we want to be in Costco someday. Maybe we don't. I don't know. That's down the road. Right. But they've been, you know, a good partner. Other ingredients, we do have some wholesalers. There's one out of Montreal we get a lot from. Some folks here, Donovan's Industrial Park. And we're trying to use, like, where we can in a product like ours, we can use some local ingredients. So our salt comes from Bonavista, Newfoundland Salt Company. And it really is different using their stuff than table salt or something. Like, you know it's there, but it's not salty. In the future, we'd like to do more with products that fit into Barbara. So we use blueberries from Walsh's Blueberry Farm here and Campbellton Berry Farm out in Campbellton. We had to dry the berries ourselves, which when you're making 100 is great. When you need to make 500 or 1,000.
So do you have dehydrators somewhere?
We did. We had commercial ones going and humming away. So we made that one summer. Now we're looking to source berries that are already dried. It's always nice to work with local vendors. Yeah. It's a new connection. Customers are increasingly looking for it. Yeah. You know, what's in it? Where is it from?
How do you get the oats? Is it rolled?
It's a rolled oat, but it's a thicker one. Even after we blend them up in pretty powerful machines, there's still some nuts there and like a little crunch. There's a little toothiness to it. We use a rolled oat, and it's the same oat we use for our bars, as well as we make little single serve oatmeal packets.
If you want to add hot water to it, like breakfast cereal. Okay.
So it's the same one, really versatile ingredients. Actually, most of our ingredients go into a couple things. It's not a big pantry, but we make a lot of products out of what we have.
So that rollout to stores, that's probably a pretty gradual process. Do you have any suggestions for people who might be on the path?
For us, all of our sales was built on some previous sales. So I know our very first store, Simply for Life in Stavanger Drive, they took our product because we were already at a farmer's market. We could go to them and say, people have bought this before. Yeah. And then when I went there, I think it was, might have been a cafe in my hometown, say, well, we sell at Simply for Life in St. John's. Yeah. So a lot of store owners, you know, they don't evaluate a food product forensically. They're just like, well, where else do you sell this? Mm-hmm. So we've always really tried to capitalize on that. It's the simple things, but they're hard to do. Like going to a store and saying hello and making an introduction. When they don't answer the phone and they don't answer the email, you do need to follow up. And then sometimes you need to come by and see if you can set up a meeting. So most of those things are long term. Yeah. Like Coleman's, for example, we were talking with Coleman's, I think it was 8 or 9 months. And they wanted the product. They were tasting the product. They were finding places in the store for the product. Yeah. But just time marches on. Sobeys was over a year, but you just keep pushing on that. And now we've started that process with other stores of just continuing to push. I think for us too, it's you always think about, well, where are the customers and where do they want to buy this product? And you kind of just need to be driven by at least your understanding of what customers want or what they told you they want.
Right.
Early on, our business, most of our growth actually came from online sales. Yeah. We have an online store, and that was really the backbone of the business. It still is, but through 2020 was almost all the business. And it was great. We had everything was dialed in. We had a nice e-commerce machine going, but we just knew that when things open up from COVID, they're going to want to go to the store. They're going to want to go out for that coffee they haven't had in a couple of years. So we worked a lot harder to get into the, you know, the retail stores.
Yeah. So the people you're talking to in the grocery stores, they're probably responsible for hundreds of brands. You're competing for attention.
I mean, they have just thousands of brands. And but, you know, sometimes you need to solve the problem that the store manager has. Okay. So when I tell the story of the oat company, it's an all-natural food, no added sugar, it's a great healthy snack for anyone. Well, stores, they have enough of those. They do. They've got lots of products like that.
Yeah.
But there was a Dominion here in town. It's our first one. And I was poking at them and following up. And then finally, one of our conversations meandered over to logistics. Well, how are you going to get it here? Because every day they're worried about the ferry.
Sure.
They have fresh product that's expiring that day. Yeah. They have some vendor who is maybe not living up to their commitment. So I said to a guy, I said, promise you, your product will never hit the highway. It'll go from downtown to your store, period. And he was like, okay, bring it in. So all of a sudden, he couldn't care less what was in it. He just knows, I don't care. There's no ferry. There's no highway. There's no snowstorm. Yeah. There's nothing. Yeah. It's like the owner just told me, he'll make sure my shelf is good. Because what I learned too, these store managers, they get evaluated, like it's relentless, the evaluation of their stores from corporate ghost walkers.
Oh, okay. Ghost walkers.
Yeah. Ghost shoppers. But there's corporate people constantly going around.
Checking the shelves.
The variety, the cleanliness, everything's fully stocked. Increasingly, they get brownie points for local, which helped a lot of local brands. One of the chains, maybe a year and a half ago, a little bit behind on their local. And someone in, I'm assuming Ontario, said, you got to pick up the pace. Yeah. And it was 9 or 10 of us locally. Got a call one day, said, how fast can you get this stuff in? Because my boss just told us to get it.
And he's coming on the plane.
Yeah.
On
and someone's going to be in. So those are the things that if you have a relationship with the store manager, and if you took the time to at least know what they're dealing with and to listen, you realize there's other ways to maybe make a sale than just what's in your product.
Pull the dream from the Pacific air. All day you see on Amazon, looking for light in the blinding day. You pose and you patiently wait, your arms held out like a cell. So close, you just need the wind to come blow.
Was Echo Park by Tim Baker. Today I'm talking with Patrick Griffin of The Oat Company. In this final section, we talk about the crowded space of the snack food world and how churches can make solid contributions to food security. But first, I ask him about what customers want from his products.
The biggest thing is no added sugar. There's natural sugar in grains and dates and things like that. Most customers, if they're mindful at all about their food, they know the sugar in absolutely everything. From their yogurt to spaghetti sauce, of course their cereal and their juice. It's just like, I can't escape it. So we're saying there's no added sugar in there. And otherwise, people are looking for natural food. Very few are all the way vegan. There's very few that it needs to be gluten-free. That's still smaller segments of the population. Yep. So that kind of 1-2 punch, natural and no added sugar, that has been the winning combination so far for us. And those are pretty enduring trends, sugar and natural. They're not fads by any stretch. Clean, natural, no sugar, people get it.
So why do so many companies use sugar? Why corn syrup? Would it be cheaper if you substituted that for one of your natural...
Oh, yeah. Dramatically cheaper. And I think the scaling up of the process would be huge to be able to make more and make it so, so cheap.
Do you have a vision about how you want the company to evolve?
I'm delighted with the journey so far. The aspect of growing a small business energizes me arguably more than, say, making nice food. But like, I'd love to have a national brand. So then your brand and your product, all of your logistics and your sales pitch, all of that is now standing on its own 2 feet. Where we are right now, I know that we get a lot of local support. We've probably got sales purely because we're local. And that's good. And we're going to leverage that as much as we can. But it's an exciting challenge for me personally to say, well, I'm going to leverage all that to compete head-to-head in Quebec and Ontario, where nobody cares we're from Newfoundland. We're just a product that hopes to be considered and chosen by someone else. That's exciting because it's terrifically crowded space. There's a lot of bars, there's a lot of snack products, a lot of good food, a lot of good brands, but we think ours is pretty good too.
And there could be people who are quite attracted by the fact that The Oat Company is in the basement of the Gower Street United Church in St. John. People like that sort of homey aspect of food is still one step removed from your own kitchen.
Oh yeah. The brand, it doesn't look completely homemade in a saran wrap, but it's not all the way generic. We've tried to still keep a little bit of heart and soul soul and the brand not look too refined.
Talk a bit about how Gower Street is seeing what you do with the Oat Company as part of their mission. I don't know if that's too heavy a word.
Mission strategy? Yeah, certainly. Yeah. Well, I'm also the chair of the board here at Gower. One thing Gower's done, to its credit, I think the board and the congregation, is they really accepted the fact that, I'll call it the golden era, where people used to have season tickets to their seat at Gower. It's a true story. And, you know, it was packed. Yeah. And Sunday school was packed, and they had no trouble paying their bills. So we've done a couple of things. The biggest, though, really, is to turn Gower Street into a downtown community hub. So one big part of that is, how do we get other organizations, private, nonprofit, whatever, in here for events or even long-term as rentals? So the kitchen was one opportunity. We've taken more and more of that space, and now are a every month recurring revenue for Gower. We also have Music in L now, which is a nonprofit, the Music Industry Association, renting space, as well as other community organizations, Stellaberry Community Services, the Pottle Center, to come in here, have an event here, hopefully form an attachment, become a long-term or a one-time supporter. So our small little business is a part of that, and we hope that all those little pieces will come together as a whole, and this place will have a future that includes, but also extends beyond, Sunday morning service.
Yeah, I think people don't realize the capacity in some churches in terms of kitchens for small entrepreneurs like yourself to get a start.
Oh, definitely. The gap that we've seen, and hopefully churches can meet this, there's a lot of small food makers. There's people making jam sauces, cupcakes, preserves, whatever. Some of them do want to grow. They actually would be just delighted if they could sell more and more, and in fact might have the demand to make more. But they just simply can't do that at home, and they don't know how to make the next step and don't want to have a loan to go renovate a place. But to get into a church for, say, a few hours a week, rental with some storage, the equipment's there, most small businesses don't need much, it's whatever was in their home anyway, I think it would be a great opportunity.
Yeah. What's some of your favorite food?
Some of my favorite food, I'm a big seafood lover. Just simple cod, baked or pan-fried, that might be my top one.
Yeah.
If I had to pick a dream meal, I definitely love seafood, and I'm a vegetable lover. Like roasted vegetables this time of year, go to one of the local farms or farmer's market and just chop them all up, throw them in the oven, give them a toss, salt, pepper, a little bit of oil, and oh my goodness.
Are you in Scotland yet?
No.
That's the thing. Downtown Glasgow.
You know? That would be cool. They have an oatmeal competition, the Golden Spurtle or something.
Golden Spurtle.
It's oats, water, and salt. That's the only things you can use.
Oh, I see.
And see who can make the best oatmeal. So the oat company.
Wouldn't that be a bragging right then?
That would be something.
Well, thanks so much, Patrick, for taking the time, and it's wonderful to see this. And I think I first saw your bars at cafes and so on, and then I just looked at the website. This is a St. John's company.
I'm glad you found us. And we heard that last week was a big market, Jack Byrne. It's funny, the number of people that came up, it was dozens and dozens that said, hey, I saw these bars before at Sobeys or Coleman's, wherever. Yes. I had no idea it was local. Now, we have a big old Newfoundland flag on it, but it just was a lesson to say, you know, we got to keep hammering that because it resonates with people. Even if they just stop, hopefully they buy it too.
Yeah.
But that's a big part of the brand to bring that out. Yeah. People are looking for it. So I'd recommend anyone, any maker, to really bring that through. Yeah. That you're here, you make it here, you know, you support here.
And as we know from Come From Away, it doesn't hurt you anywhere in the world to say you're from Newfoundland.
Oh, it doesn't. Well, I'll tell you, one short little story. When we went to a food show, we were not prepared. I just jumped in.
Toronto or something?
Yeah, up in Montreal. Yeah. Biggest food show in the world. They're all over the world. Paris, Toronto, the U.S. So we were part of Atlantic Pavilion. People were so intrigued. Oh, so you're from Newfoundland? What are you doing here? And what are you making? And no one has been to Newfoundland, but they want to go to Newfoundland. Yeah. And just pure curiosity about Newfoundland. People are genuinely intrigued about the place. So we're gonna use that as best we can.
Yeah. Well, good luck with that.
I appreciate it.
Thanks again.
Yeah, thank you.
Take care. All the best.
So a lot of store owners, you know, they don't evaluate a food product forensically. They just think, well, where else do you sell this? There's a huge demand from small startups that want or need to leave their home and looking for a commercial space, but just don't have the funds to go renovate a commercial space. It's always nice to work with local vendors. It's a new connection. Customers are increasingly looking for it. You know, what's in it? Where's it from? If you have a relationship with the store manager and if you took the time to at least know what they're dealing with and to listen, you realize there's other ways to maybe make a sale than just what's in your product.
This has been Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. To listen to other episodes of this show or for more information, go to fittoeatnl.ca. To send me a message, email me at iemke@grenfell.mun.ca. For music on today's show, we heard Tim Baker, formerly of Hey Rosetta, with a song Echo Park. The theme music, Huck Old Hen, was performed this week by the new wave old-time string band out of Ithaca, New York, called The Horseflies. This show was made possible by a grant from the Community Radio Fund of Canada and is produced by the Voice of Bombay Radio Network and Kitchen Table Communications. I'm Ivan Imke. Join me again next time. I'll be right here. Happy trails.
Clean, natural, no sugar. People will get it.